Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking about listening and recording audio. Audio plays an important role in how visually impaired people interpret and perceive the world around them.
We'll speak with Neil Ewers, founder and head of Ravenswood Productions, about what makes a quality audio recording, and we'll hear recommendations of tools and techniques for recording, producing, and appreciating audio material. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is excerpted from an audio vignette that Neil Ewers created called The World Behind My Eyes.
The World Behind My Eyes. Can you hear a smile? Have you ever heard that certain quality in a friend's voice that says that he is lonely? Can you tell from your mother's footsteps that she has had a very stressful day? Do you ever listen for that certain something in a friend's laugh that tells you your friend is laughing to cover up his sadness? For my entire life, I have been totally blind. Now, before you say to yourself something like, "Isn't that awful?" or, "Boy, he must miss a lot," stop and think for a minute. You see my blindness as it would seem to you if, all of a sudden, you were no longer able to see. To be sure, that would be a most devastating occurrence. I, on the other hand, have never known what it is to see with my eyes. So, I use my other senses. I see with my hands, my ears, my nose, and my mouth.
It's because of what Neil just said about needing to experience the world using his other senses because his vision isn't working that what we'll be talking about today is so important for blind people, how blind people receive all sorts of information via audio instead of via visual means. And that's not just the written word. It's all sorts of information about the world around them and how they learn to appreciate the various audio cues that they receive.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
the Guide Dog Foundation, training and placing guide dogs for over 70 years, providing independence, enhanced mobility, and companionship to people who are visually impaired or have other special needs at no personal cost. To learn more about their programs or to apply for a guide dog, visit www.guidedog.org. Well, that wasn't our usual breaker tune. That was a recording of a work train that Neil made, and as he described it, it was going who knows where. And we'll talk more later about how he makes these recordings. Let's start by meeting Neil and learning a little bit about his production company, Ravenswood Productions.
My name is Neil Ewers, and I am totally blind. I grew up in Possum Hollow, Virginia, population 24. It's now 23. Actually, it's now a ghost town because nobody lives there. Went to the Virginia School for the Blind. Graduated from there. Went to a college in Virginia, Lynchburg College, which happened to be good in nuclear physics and sociology. I'm not a nuclear physicist. I'm a sociologist. Went from there to working at the Library of Congress. And went from there to the University of Wisconsin, where I studied sociology again. And let's see, what did I do? Oh, I was a concert pianist for a while when I was in high school and at Library of Congress. I had a small orchestra and a touring group and classical piano because I took piano starting at about 4 years old. And finally decided that I didn't, well, as much as I'd like to have become a classical pianist, it would have required a whole lot of hours in the practice room because Braille music, well, when it came to Bartok and Schoenberg and all those modern guys, there was just not going to be an easy way for me to learn them.
So what did you do instead?
I have always been a people person, and I became more of a people person. When I came to Wisconsin, I began a corporation called InterVision, which worked with sighted people to help them understand what their non-visual senses could teach them. We'd take people out in the forest and sit them down and listen to sounds, and they'd be bored as heck for the first 15 or 20 minutes. Then they'd begin to realize that, my gosh, listen to the sounds you can hear, and how does it affect me? How does it make me feel? And it was from that I got much more heavily into voice work. I did a lot of voice workshops for industry, for organizations, to try to help people understand what their voice was saying between the lines and how your voice came across to other people, because we all hear people's voices and we all have impressions of them based on whether they sound friendly or not friendly or X, Y, or Z, and did that for a while, and then went to work at the Trace Research and Development Center at the University of Wisconsin, which is a rather internationally known center for helping to make things accessible. We were the people who developed the first voting machine. We have developed the kiosks that are in the post office. And I was not a computer person at that point. I had a computer, but I got so involved in the depth of what makes technology technology that I think that was the springboard. And to make a long story short, I no longer work there, but I do a lot of consulting for Microsoft and other companies and educational institutions. I teach a class at a local college. I own a recording company, obviously. Well, it's not obvious except to most people who have heard my podcasts. When I also still keep up my music, I have CDs on the market. So I'm retired, basically, but not retired.
And what exactly does your recording company do?
Ravenswood is mostly a company that records on-location concerts. We have a studio, but it's not really big enough for a band. But we mostly do a lot of symphony orchestras, choirs, bigger groups, or smaller groups, but in their location. And I do a lot of narration. I do a lot of voiceover work.
And we'll be talking with Neil today about what he's learned and his experiences in working with audio.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is what kinds of audio equipment and techniques you need to make a decent sound recording.
You've obviously done a lot of audio production throughout the years, and you're very much into audio and particularly how visually impaired people use audio. And you had some very interesting thoughts on comparing audio recording to visual recordings.
I have done a lot of audio. I've been interested in sound all my life. But you're right. It occurs to me that there's a real similarity between how people take pictures and how people record audio.
Yeah, most of them take the audio equivalent of a snapshot.
Right. And if I'm recording a train, for example, and the only channel that I hear the train in pretty much is the left channel because they're sort of looking down the side of the train, that's only half a train because I don't hear the other half in my right ear. I expect to hear a train going by from right to left or left to right. Now, I realize that's not always where you are when you hear a train. So the question is, what exactly about that train do you want to be in focus? Do you want it to sound sort of off in the distance? Do you want it to be going in front of you from either direction? Do you want it to be behind you? Think about how you want to compose this recording, just as people think about how they want to compose a picture. And also, the other thing I hear when I hear a lot of recordings is people playing with their microphones, getting it adjusted. You can do that beforehand. It's like putting your hand over the camera lens. Who can see through a hand? Now, I can hear over a recording that has a lot of noise in it of people playing with the microphones, but it really doesn't please me. It's not a very good recording. Or how do you set the levels? How do you make sure that you're not distorted? I'm not going to do that here because I don't want to blow your eardrums, but getting too close to the microphone, blowing into it, popping your peas into it, those are all things that detract, as any kind of blurriness would detract from a picture. So there is a great deal of similarity, I think, between the two.
Well, I've listened to several of your audio recordings, and you really do a fine job of giving a person who's listening to the audio a sense of being in the scene. I mean, you've recorded things on the side of a road or even a car pulling out of a garage, and you really get the sense that you're standing right there experiencing what you're experiencing.
That I learned pretty much from Ravenswood. There are a lot of recordings, professional recordings, that have been made with, they mic the trumpets, they mic all the brass, they mic the violins, they mic the double basses, and then they sort of add it all together and come up with a collage. Some recording companies, including my own, have really gone to the simpler is better approach. Let's try to make the recording sound like what you hear when you're in the concert. And when you're in a concert, you're not going to be standing there right over the brass section or over the violin section. You're going to be sitting, let's say, in the third row of the audience. So what do you hear in that position? How do I place the microphones? So with two microphones and three at most, but often two, how do I get a realistic sound? How do I get a stereo effect? How do I make it wider or narrower if I want it to be wider or narrower? Do I put a baffle in the middle to kind of reflect the sound and make it more binaural? There's a lot of things you can do with microphones to make the sound exactly what you want it to be.
And I guess being visually impaired, you're particularly sensitive to the audio. You've spoken before about how much information you get through your ears that sighted people are often ignoring.
I think that's why a lot of people who are blind like the idea of binaural recordings, because they're trying to get what it is they hear in their own ears.
How did you get started making stereo recordings? That didn't used to be all that common.
I began my really sort of binaural recording experience many years ago with the local public radio station here, who was doing a drama broadcast. And they were doing a binaural recording of a bunch of cows charging, some bulls, some cows. And guess what? I'm the low man on the totem pole, so I'm the person standing there with the microphone while the cows are charging.
I hope there was a fence.
No, there was not. But we had a plan, and it worked, fortunately, because I'm still here. But you do learn a lot from experience, and you don't always start out doing good work, but it's certainly possible to reach a greater sensitivity.
For someone who is just starting out in music production, want to make their own recordings of podcast or music, are there any general hints or guidelines that you can give them, or is this all trial and error and based on lots of experience?
A lot of it is trial and error, but there's also a couple things. What recorder is best for you? There are certainly a lot of them out there.
And you've reviewed many of them on your website.
Yeah, I've reviewed ones that have spoken menus. I've reviewed ones that do not. And some people really require the spoken menus. They just really feel that that gives them an assurance that they're recording. And you're right, it does. There are, however, recorders that don't have spoken menus, and one has to learn to press the right button at the right time and hope. Now, part of it is finding a recorder that works for you, and not only how do the spoken menus work, but does it have microphones that you like? Does it have an ability to adjust the microphones, to spread them apart, to make them narrower, etc.? How do you figure out how to set the level so you're not recording? And that is certainly trial and error, because you certainly aren't going to be able to see the, well, unless you're partially sighted, you likely won't be able to see the meters. So one way is to just make a whole bunch of recordings and raise the volume gradually. And when you hear distortion, you back it off a bit. However, there are recorders like the Olympus LS14 that has what's called smart mode, which is basically a rehearsal mode. And you start recording, and it looks at the volume and picks the part that is the loudest and adjusts the volume, and then you press record. And now, as long as you don't record any louder than that, you'll be fine. So there are recorders that give you some help at that. I think another thing is how close you are to the recording. How is it for wind noise, for popping and blowing into it? I always suggest having a windscreen when you're doing voiceovers, and certainly when you're outside. And I think that's one of the things that disappoints me most about a lot of people's sort of everyday recordings, is that they're outside in the wind, and the wind makes this horrendous noise in the microphones, which is often much louder than what they're recording themselves. I heard a recording a couple days ago that a sighted friend of mine made. It was of mourning birds, but you could hear the wind blowing in the microphones much louder than you could hear the birds, which was not I don't think it's what they wanted.
You've tested lots of equipment. How do you deal with a new microphone or recorder that doesn't have spoken menus?
I've actually had to have people go through the menus with me to know where things are. And I guess the other thing to think about in the recording and getting used to a recorder is, how are the menus? Do they rap? And most of them do. Sometimes I take notes on my computer and write down the menus. Sometimes I do shortcuts of, okay, if I want to get to format, I go down 6 times, I press enter, I go up 3 times. So I don't really get the whole menu there as much as I do the shortcut ways of how to get there. Now, as long as you know where you are in the menus, that works. But if you're not where you think you are, you could do some dastardly things.
You could wind up with something horrible and miss the entire recording.
You could, and I have. One of the nice things about most recorders, however, is that if you turn them off and on, the menu tree starts at the top. So you always, at least in most cases I've dealt with, you always know where you are. And yes, there's a lot to remember if you don't have speech input or voice guidance or whatever it's called. But it can be done. And I have a bunch of recorders which have no speech. I may not use that recorder for a month. And I may have to go back and look at my notes to say, okay, how do I get to format the card or turning down the bass? And I read it and I click down X number of times and do it and listen to it and make sure it works.
So you're basically very systematic and organized, and you have a sighted person go through these menus with you. And I suppose even when you're selecting a recorder or purchasing one, you must take special note of the buttons and menus and how they work.
If I am buying a recorder for my own use, yeah, you better believe it. I buy something that I know I can use.
So many of these digital recorders have their built-in mics, and I assume you use them mostly. But I know in your podcast, you use many, many different external microphones. What do you have to say about selecting external microphones or using them?
It again depends on what you want to record. I keep going back to the visual. It's like selecting a lens for a camera. Do you want a wide-angle lens or do you want a telescopic lens? Why, a telescopic meaning you record only the bare minimum right in front of the microphone. So there's cardioid, which means narrow. There's hypercardioid, which is even narrower. That would be like and there's shotgun mics, which are even narrower. So depending on what you want. There's dynamic mics, there are condenser mics. Dynamic mics are much better for speech and band recording of loud instruments. Condenser microphones are what I use for live recording of concerts because their frequency response is better. They have pickup that's better longer away from the microphone itself, and so you can record at a distance and not lose frequency. If I back off from my microphone, which happens to be a Shure Beta 58A dynamic microphone, which is a hypercardioid mic, so it does not pick up a lot of sounds in the background, which I don't want it to at this point. If I were recording a group of people, I would pick an omnidirectional mic that picked up from all over so that everybody would be heard. So it depends on what you want. There's just an awful lot of mics out there.
So having just given everybody all sorts of good advice about if you want this, buy that, if somebody's just beginning, is there kind of a all-around compromise type of mic that you would recommend people start with?
I'm begging your question because it depends on what you want to do with it. Let's say you want to do podcasts. For example, there are a lot of the Shure mics, which are under $100. The Shure SM58 is about $99. It is a one-channel microphone. It's a condenser. It's very well made. Drop it, and you probably won't even damage it. I try not to drop mine.
We're using Shure SM58 microphones also, and we have not dropped them yet.
They're rugged. And one of the nice things about them is that they have really made it possible, because of the shock mounting of the microphone, you can handle it as you're holding it, and you might hear a little bit of noise, but you don't hear much. There are some microphones that if you... I remember having the Zoom H1 recorder, and if I'm holding it tightly enough, it actually picked up the pulse in my finger of my heartbeat. Now, that's not good. So I would suggest maybe a good condenser mic or finding a recorder whose internal mics you like. Get a windscreen, and you don't even have to worry about having a mic.
You've mentioned an awful lot of choices. How would somebody decide?
It's all in the ear of the beholder, to some extent.
And what's most popular is not necessarily what the professionals think is so-called the best. We used to work at Xerox, and we both did a lot of work on image quality, and some of our competitors would purposely make the prints come out more pink than they actually were in the original scene. And there was a big discussion of whether that was better or preferred. It was certainly less accurate. But you really need to consider what your audience wants to see or hear in the case of visual or audio information.
I have worked with groups of people that tell me I want X sound, and it may not be what I would have chosen, but it's their work. Also, I think listening to things and being aware of when you're listening, whether you're listening through speakers, whether you're listening through headphones, how does it sound to you? Is it pleasing to you? And if so, how would you go about miking that particular environment? But you're right. A lot of it is in the eye and the ear of the beholder, and they may have certain things they want, which is not necessarily what you want. And the question is, how do you make sure that you give them that? One of the things I also do when I record a concert, especially when I make one of my own CDs, is I will play it on probably 10 different kinds of devices, small speakers, big speakers, round speakers, square speakers, speakers far apart, speakers close together, and try to, as best as I can, make it work in all situations. Now, that's not always possible. It's not going to sound the same with a 2-inch speaker that it does with a 15-inch speaker. But if it sounds really hideous in one of those formats, you have to wonder why. And how do you go about making it work in as many situations as you can?
Well, I guess that's good advice for everybody. And hopefully people will know a little bit more about how to make some good recordings of their own.
Perhaps like the following. That was excerpted from a musical intro that Neil made for a podcast. It was recorded in Sonar using his Tyros 4 keyboard. And now for this week's final item, how to get more information about audio equipment and how to contact Neil, as well as how to hear more of his sounds.
So as we've mentioned, you've done a number of podcasts on the use of various digital recorders and microphones. What other resources would you recommend people can use to find out more about some of these devices?
I have done a number of podcasts over the years. Not all of them are in the same place, but there is a site that I can give you, which is http://ravenswood, ravenswood.org/allthingsneil, all one word.
And you spell Neil, N-E-A-L.
N-E-A-L. Thanks for bringing that up. It's a blog. It's not what you'd normally go to get a list of podcasts. So I comment on things, and you might have to go to the next page to, or page 3 to find what you want. But there's a lot of stuff there.
Another place you can find many of his sounds that he's created, as well as some of his thoughts, is on audioboom.com. And maybe you've never heard of that, but we also have a channel at audioboom.com. So just search for Neil Ewers or Eyes on Success.
And what other resources do you have to recommend to listeners?
I often go to YouTube and listen to people's demonstrations. Now, they may not be giving me what exactly I want to know, like how accessible are they, but they might use the recorder. And so you might be able to hear how it sounds. But what I have found is that the rate of really good recorders that are being made has slowed down a bit. They've sort of reached what they can make their best recorder to be. And unless another company comes on the market, well, there might be some tweaks to things, but what's on my site and what you can find on other sites, I think will be a help.
What else would people find on your website besides the blog?
I have my own music recordings, which is different because I use keyboards, but I also have a lot of nature recordings, which people can listen to and say, okay, this is how this sounds. I wonder how he got that sound. And if you give me an email, and I'll tell you. So that's http://ravenswood.org. And there's a bunch of stuff there. There's a section on audio essays that talk about how I grew up being blind, which has nothing to do with recording necessarily. There is my blurb on live recording and what I use. There are my CDs, and I actually have a library of 10 or 15 sounds that I can combine on a CD for people or download. And some of them recorded show notes say how they're recorded, but if you listen to something and like it, let me know. It may depend on the sound of the microphone, but it more than often depends on not just the sound, but where the microphones are placed. That's the key that I think people learn as they go about, because I don't know a lot of sites on the internet that talk about microphone placement and how to get a good recording by where you put the microphones. But that's key. That goes back to that old, how do you get composition of a good sound? And you learn through experience, you learn by asking people.
You said that if people have questions, they can send you an email. What's your email address?
My email address is Neil, N-E-A-L, period, E-W-E-R-S, at Ravenswood, R-A-V-E-N-S-W-O-O-D, .org. I won't promise I will answer every question, because unfortunately I get about 300 emails a day, so it may take a while, because I do a lot of consulting, and that's also my consulting email address. And I do a lot of audio consulting as well. So I'll try to get to you, but don't get annoyed or frustrated if I don't answer you right back in the next 15 minutes. I'll try.
So if you're looking for any of that contact information or links to other episodes of Eyes on Success in which we discussed audio or audio production, just go to our show notes for this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1628. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be discussing accessibility initiatives at IBM. As a general consumer, you may or may not be aware of IBM's commercial products, but behind the scenes, they've done a lot of work on accessibility, including creating tools that are used by many other companies in developing their products. We'll speak with Drew LaHart and Eric Manser of the IBM accessibility team about what they've been doing in this field. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.